Hello, and welcome to another episode of Saffron Honey Chai. And this is a very special episode. No, there hasn't been a tragic event, but we do have guest stars today, and we have a lot of guest stars today. So I would like everyone to go around the table in this order and introduce themselves, and we're going to discuss pride and the history of pride with our own personal mindsets towards it. So let's go.
Okay. My name's Diavion. You can find me at Dreamless Behavior on Instagram. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Roberta. Happy Pride Month.
Hi, my name is Nicole. My pronouns are she, they. Happy Pride.
Happy Pride, happy Pride. Now, as we know, things have been a little rough for us, as people who care about human rights and gay rights and trans rights this past year because of all the rollbacks of rights. But I kind of want to look back at sort of the beginning of how things went, because I don't know if anyone here knows this, but right before the AIDS epidemic, gay rights was actually like really trucking on. Like, had that not happened, we would have, I mean, it would have been like 50 plus years of gay marriage instead of us just reaching what, the 10th anniversary right now?
Pretty much.
Just about. Yeah. So, like, I know some of us, we went to the Christopher Street walking tour, and we learned some things there, but like, what do you think could be our bright, beautiful future of pride and gay rights, as long as we have the right mindset about it?
I think gay rights and pride in general is something that just has to be honored all year long. I know there is a significance to June and in relation to the Stonewall riots. And I think that it's a way to acknowledge and praise those activists and advocates that came before us. But I definitely feel that pride should be something that is celebrated and honored all year long instead of just the one month. Of course, for everyone as well, but when we think about different diversities and so forth, but definitely pride, signaling our identity, signaling our fluidity and the expansion of being proud of who you are is something that should continue on beyond June and beyond the awareness months that we have set up throughout that calendar year.
Okay, purr.
Shout out to my girl for that beautiful, wonderful tour that he gave us on that really, really hot day. I think a lot of it has to do with like education and how we kind of reframe a lot of stuff, because if you go back in the education system, it's like racism, homophobia, transphobia, all of that TERF material mindsets. It's really just taught and it's passed down from generation to generation. So being open-minded and actually not really, some people don't want to welcome change, but just being, I guess, just open to like seeing it and not like hating on it, because you don't know like what it could bring to our society. I recently just watched a video where they were offering like pride discounts, and this one guy was like, yeah, no, I don't want it. It's like, we don't like a good, like in this economy, you don't want a good like discount. Come
I'm
on.
gonna take a discount, which is to do to prove it. What's happening? I'll come in, hold the hands. Come on now.
Literally. So I would just think that like education, just being like open to it, it really doesn't cause zero sense to just be kind.
I agree. I think another thing we really need to focus on is the intersectionality and the lack of it in the gay community. Because it's really nice to be gay, wave rainbow flags and everything. But when the first thing somebody thinks of when they think of a lesbian is Ruby Rose or Chapel Roan, we have a problem. We have a massive problem, because every time somebody says, oh, let's cast a lesbian, they don't think of Lena Waithe. They don't think of Queen Latifah. They
They don't
think of,
think of a real lesbian.
no, they don't think of a real lesbian at all. They really don't. They think of what would a man want to look at
Yeah.
regardless.
Sad.
Because even in lesbianism, it's still male-centered, which is so wonderful. But also, like, people of color, genuinely, we don't get enough spotlight. We have people who don't get the platform that they're supposed to have, even though they're POC, they're LGBTQ. It's ridiculous how we have all these spokespeople, quote unquote, and they're just white people. which is fine. Obviously, you don't want to be discriminatory towards anyone. However, there needs to be more voices, considering mostly people of color were the ones leading the rebellions in the first place. Like,
this is so real. And I'm actually really glad you brought up that part, because the people of color that were supporting us, they weren't just people of color. They were also our trans sisters. And they were supporting the movement, not just with their time and energy and expertise. They were literally financing the movement with their bodies, because they were also sex workers. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were doing that to not only provide for themselves and their own, like, standard of living, but to feed their community. They were taking care of people. They were helping in any way, shape, or form that they could. And this is at the same time it was being taken advantage of by the mafia. You know, please don't come for us. But yeah.
Truth is spoken.
I think it can be hard when we're in this current landscape where it's become more acceptable and safe to be a bigot, someone who's moving with hate. But I do think, especially with, like, you know, as of this recording, we just recently got our Democratic mayoral candidate chosen in New York City. And, you know, his platform was extremely, you know, left-wing, liberal, just free to say, no, we're here for trans people. We're here for gay people. We're here for everybody. We're going to make space for everybody. And for so many years, especially these past few years with Trump specifically, people have been so afraid. They've been like, oh, I don't dare share that I, you know, have thoughts or feelings of equality. Well, no, we need to stand up and really, even if it's just in a small way, be like, no, I'm going to hold space for you. This is our community. This is our community. People don't want to take ownership of our community because it has to be, oh, it's their community. They have to worry about it. No, they're part of our community. Mm-hmm. We are each other's community. That's how life works. We all belong to each other.
Yeah. I think there's, like, also this space where even when Trump being covering a lot of things in terms of social media, there's also just, like, an understanding that as LGBTQ, non-binary, queer folks, as they continue, the more they want to erase them, the more they step up and they step out of the norm, I guess you can say. So I think that with a lot of the administration's role in picking up policies and things like that are more centered towards hatred, more centered towards exclusion, more centered towards division, I feel like the queer community is continuing to get closer and closer in the way that we can bridge something that is something that we can overcome. It takes a lot of power. It takes a lot of manpower and human connection to be able to build something that is still consistently being fought for in terms of our rights and our dignities being acknowledged and being proud of it. But I think that as we continue to, like, see the way that administration shifts, I feel like there is more, I'm hoping there is more a sense of togetherness when it comes to the queer community and how we push forward, even though our identities are trying to be erased.
Kind of to, like, riff off of that, since I'm, like, studying for my master's exam, a lot of it has to do with, like, staying in that bubble. It's like homeostasis. We don't want to disrupt what we already know, and just sticking to, like, the old traditional mindset is, like, Adam and Eve type shit. And then trying to break away from that, just, like, that change is too scary for them, unfathomable, untangible. It's something that they don't want to contribute towards because it's new. And to make that change, not a lot of people can put in that, like, energy or effort. But then there's advocates and people that will stand up for us, like the CUNY School of Law that, like, recently just went with a bunch of students to go, like, change their names, like, legally. Like, that's so cool. I never thought that was an option. And to hear that, like, they were, like, bringing people, like, legal advocates with us that would just be like, hey, like, let's do this together. Like, you don't have to do it alone. Like, we're growing stronger and bigger as much as the terrorists try to tear us down.
Which is really cool. But it's, like, The sad part is there's also another side that gets kind of deeper into it, where just as much as the progressionalism is good, in a way, sometimes it's too much, because I also feel like sometimes our message gets lost. So you have people trying to redefine what a gay man is, trying to redefine what a lesbian is, in fear of not being inclusive enough, instead of focusing on the outward problems we tear each other down.
Mm.
So it's really a situation where when we come together as a community and agree, you are my sister, you are my brother, you are my person, your family regardless, we should all fight together rather than fighting each other. Because the discourse between all the communities within the LGBT community is one of the biggest reasons why we have such a struggle like that. From racism to classism to ageism to just general sexualities not meshing, like gay men having a problem with lesbians, lesbians having a problem with bi people being like, they feel like they're victimized, and then you have trans people who get it from all sides. It's just too much
now,
you know? So if we can just come together as one community and agree we're all one people at the end of the day. Marsha P. Johnson was one of our biggest advocates. She was a Black trans woman. Say her name. She's important. A lot of people don't acknowledge that fact. Intersectionality exists. And that's something we really, really need to hit home in these coming years when we fight for progressionalism. It needs to be on all fronts. Not like how Susan V. Anthony fought for feminist rights. So it's just like, yeah, but just the white women. The rest of y'all, good luck. You know? Like,
meanwhile, they were the ones in the front line.
Exactly. It's like
second wave feminism.
So it's like, because you have people like Marsha, who I have people that I talk with, and I'm just like, she didn't just fight for gay rights. She fought for Black rights. She helped the Panthers. The Pink Panthers helped the Black Panthers. Where was the reciprocation? You know, being an intersectional identity is difficult simply for that reason. You're Black. I don't like it because you're gay. You're gay. They don't like you because you're Black.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can get into all of that, including, oh, God, don't even get into the fat shaming in the queer community. Uh-huh. It's atrocious. It's atrocious. It's actually atrocious.
And ableism.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I do as that.
I don't want, any fetishes around, like, someone in a wheelchair.
What?
That is so unusual.
Like, it's just random, like, I only need AD.
Ooh, there's a lot of really odd stuff out there.
It's very harmful.
Yeah. It would be one thing if it was just like, no, you're attractive no matter what you look like. But it's like, they are attracted to, like, the fact that they are in a wheelchair specifically as, like, almost predatory. Actually, I would say it actually is predatory.
Yeah,
I mean, sometimes it's like, okay, so if you have certain kinds of paralysis, like, you can't feel certain things. So sometimes they want to, like,
in Greek culture.
It is actually, unfortunately. So, I mean, we do have to keep an eye out for those types of things as well, because even with acceptance, sometimes acceptance is served with a side of fetishism or fetishization, and that is also a form of dehumanization. So we have to, like, be very careful, especially with how we navigate these things.
Yeah,
because I want it to be safe.
There's also just, like, the, like, trying to think about the understanding of, like, as we expand on that, when we think about BDSM and kink, safe spaces, and allowing that to be part of the queer identity and the queer agenda, I think there also is, like, a lot of nuances around, like, that isn't something that is normalized or something that is approved within the queer community and things like that. And also bring a lot of harm and, like, subjugation around the otherness in terms of where the intersectional thought comes from. I think anyone who can continue to live with the intersectional mindset can truly thrive in accepting all forms of people and their perspectives and the spaces that they come from.
Definitely.
I just want to come to a close with not a shared message, but, like, I want us to put forth something here. So if you are speaking to someone right now who is young and queer and afraid for the future, what would you say to them?
Loaded.
Yeah.
The gun?
No, I said it's loaded. It's...
It's a loaded question. Because, like, I feel like if I think about myself in that age frame, I was also very terrified. Whether I, you know, I could only imagine being closeted and going through that, being first generation and going through that, being maybe the first in your family to be out or being considered queer is very difficult. So when I think about an advice that I want to give them is that I really want them to continue to be true to themselves and true to how they're figuring out their identity. I think that, you know, you can be 18, 15, and your mindset or your sexuality can shift at 21, 22, and it's totally okay. It's totally normal to figure out your queerness. And I think that we need to validate that, especially when they have a big question mark up in the air of like, where do they define, what's their sexuality? Am I this, that, or the other? And like, I think that we just have to meet them where they are. And my advice would be I want to make sure that you ground yourself and make sure that you create a foundation for yourself that's beyond the binaries, beyond the standard of what it looks like to be living in a heteronormative space. And it's okay to be a little different. Just remember that there's going to be a sense of community waiting for you at the end of the day. And hopefully that community will find themselves to you. Or you'll find them in connection to those comparisons, the relevance, the forms of ways that they're connecting with each other and with human spaces and things like that.
Yeah, loaded. Yeah.
Loaded.
It is loaded. Okay. Do you want to go?
You go. I'm still thinking about mine.
That's fine. It would be two words. You matter. Because sometimes as a kid, especially closeted, probably not first in my family to come out, but I didn't know about them. And they had passed before I was even born. So I'd never met them. So from my mindset, I was first. You know, I'm the older sibling on top of that. So, and an eldest daughter on top of that. So, yeah. So, you know, you really compacted on there. How do you tell your mom you're not gonna have a son-in-law ever, unless my brother got something to tell you? But you know, you matter, because sometimes some people just really need to hear that, especially when you have no one else to look to, nothing else to look to. You matter.
And I'm just gonna finish up by saying, you deserve to exist. You are a unique person if you are in this community. But you are not unusual. For the entire length of human existence, there has always been the LGBTQ. We didn't always have that name, but you've always been here and you'll always be here. And there's always room for you because you belong here. And with that, thank you so much for being here with us. Thank you so much. And that has been Saffron Honey Chai.
See y'all next time. Happy Pride.
Happy Pride. Flan, no.